This episode of La Verdad Podcast is brought to you by our friend Sonia Figueroa of CSonia.com.
Hey, B Fig.
What's up?
What's my favorite thing to do in the summer?
Watch baseball.
No. You know, my favorite thing to do is barbecue and family get-togethers, but it's hard to do when I don't have a nice big backyard.
True, which is why we should be reaching out to our chica Sonia if you want to buy a house.
Yeah, actually, Sonia has a ton of experience in helping people find the right home, especially first-time buyers, over 12 years to be exact. So, if you're listening right now and you have the itch on buying or selling, you need to contact Sonia Figueroa. V-Fig, how can you do that?
Easy. Just visit www.csonia.com. That is www.seesonia.com. Or just search for her online. She also speaks Spanish.
Habla español, mi gente. And back to the show. You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast. We're back at it again with another episode of La Verdad Podcast, and this is your host Christian, and B Fig is right next to me
too. Of course,
I forgot
always,
your name for a second.
I am always on the mic, but hopefully, whoever's listening, hopefully my mic is working this time, because last time we were experiencing some glitches that we didn't know about, and so someone was like, "We can't hear her." I was like, "Oh no!"
I accidentally put an old battery into her wireless mic last time, and the whole time I'm like, "Man, you know what? She's gonna have the best mic out of all of us, right? The wireless one, the one that's the most clear."
And she ended up being nobody got to hear me, so hopefully everybody hears me this time.
Before we begin the podcast, I always wanna encourage everyone to go ahead and like and share. If you're watching the Facebook video, the Facebook Live video, please feel free to share it so other people can see it. If you're watching the rerun on Facebook Live or YouTube or even listening to it on Audioboom, man, if you could do us the favor to just share the link, give us a like and subscribe to our podcast. You could also find us anywhere in social media using the handle of @LaVerdadLTD. Or visit our website at www.laverdadltd.com. We have a lot of exciting new things. We have a new intern who just joined the team. She's actually in the hot room.
She can't see her, but she's there.
She's outside right now. She's handling all of the audio stuff, which is amazing, because I'm sure if you've seen the podcast before, you probably see me running around making sure this microphone's working, asking the questions, getting guests in and all that. It feels awesome being able to just relax.
So thank you, Marisa. Thank you for being here, even though you're not physically in this room. We thank you.
Thank you. Gracias.
We're also joined by a special guest today. She actually reached out to us a month ago, I want to say. It was kind of funny. And before we started the podcast today, I was having a conversation with her, and I told her, hey, for the longest time, we've been wanting to talk about this topic, and the topic for today is going to be Afro-Latino, and we've been wanting to talk about it because people from the East Coast all the way to the West Coast, people in Puerto Rico have hit us up like, hey, you know, this is a topic that not a lot of people are covering, right, especially in the podcast area. Mm-hmm. So when she hit me up, it was kind of like a blessing in disguise, right? It's like, oh, wow, like, I don't have to search for anybody. It's actually here.
She came right to us.
So this person is an educator, a blogger, founder, writer, teacher.
She does everything.
Mother, everything. And we're joined here today by Angie Galvan Rodriguez. How are you today?
I am so happy to be here. Thank you for the opportunity for getting to sit down and chat with you guys. And I'm excited. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming by. I know it was kind of like a long trip. We were just talking before this, and she used to not live too far from here, but now she's kind of far away. And I know the struggle of driving on a Sunday morning when everybody's
early,
even going to church and all that. So I appreciate you coming by.
It's so early. I'm supposed to be sleeping.
Hopefully the church, right? Hopefully the church or the flea market or just
the
hanging out. Coming back from the club. I don't know.
Hey, that too. No judgment.
That too. Their heels in their hands, so, walking back to them.
I know we mentioned that you have a lot of roles, right? Mm-hmm. And you do a lot of things. And it's funny because a lot of the people that we bring onto the podcast are very similar in that, right? That we're I had someone in here who was a chef and musician and also a community activist and organizer and all these things. It's like, wow, we have a lot that we do, but it's because there's a need, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to talk specifically about your blog for the first half of the show,
okay.
And that's the Afro Latina Natural. Mm-hmm. And if you could give me a little introduction of how that begun and just who you are.
Yeah, let's start off there. Yeah, tell us about you and your story a little
Angie.
Bit.
Angie. You know, my full name is Angine, you know, okay. And then my nickname is Angie. Mm-hmm. So I am, you know, I'm a little bit, yo siempre digo, I always say ni de aquí ni de allá. I'm not from here, from there, from everywhere.
Right.
And I was born in Dominican Republic, so soy dominicana, I am Dominican. And I was raised in Puerto Rico until I was about 9 years old.
Wow.
So when I was a baby, we moved to Puerto Rico and came here when I was 9. So Chicago's home for me.
Okay.
I mean, home is where the heart is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my heart, part of my heart is in República Dominicana,
Beats
Dominican
everywhere.
Republic. My part of my heart is in Puerto Rico because that was my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart is here in Chicago.
Wow.
You know, this is home. So I'm kind of from, you know, a few places. And as you mentioned, I'm a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a blogger, I'm a writer, I'm a mom, I am all kinds of different things. And I try to have them all harmonized together.
Yeah.
And I think the blog allows that to kind of, you know, work in harmony.
Mm-hmm.
Not balance, because there's never like a 50-50.
No.
But, you know, just kind of harmonized together.
Yeah.
So that I have some kind of a zen in my life. So,
so when you guys moved to Puerto Rico, any specific reason? Because I know a lot of Dominicans end up living in Puerto Rico, then coming to the United States. It's kind of like a little transition.
It's like a transition.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my mom married my dad, and we moved with him to Puerto Rico.
Oh, okay.
Both parents Dominican?
No, my dad is Puerto Rican.
Oh, okay.
The one that raised me, and then my mom is Dominican.
Okay.
So, so I identify with, you know, part of my identity is, you know, part of the Puerto Rican culture.
Yeah.
Because that's what I knew, you know.
Right.
In Dominican, of course, definitely Dominican, because I was born, raised there. I was raised by my mom, you know, the majority of my life, it was by my mom.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a transition, but I don't remember that transition.
Yeah.
I was being a little kid, but I've always lived in this, like, cultural space, right?
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
we will always go visit Dominican Republic like 3 times
That's
a year.
Awesome, yeah.
So I'm very connected to my community in República Dominicana and Dominican Republic. And then even here, even transitioning to Chicago, like I've always either visited Dominican Republic, even to this day, I try to go at least once a year to see my family and other things, you know, and with the project that I have now, and visit Puerto Rico as well. Yes, I've always kind of lived in this just multi.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And when.
Yeah. Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, like, that's awesome. You get to, like, pull from all of it, you know?
Because
you're not
even
just
though.
One, you
yeah, and even though it's two different islands, right, that are very close together, very different, too, in the culture.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit more about it in the way that maybe it has potentially made an impact in your life to why you're doing what you do now.
Mm-hmm.
But. So when you lived here in Chicago, were you around a big Latino community?
Yes. I grew up in Logan Square.
Okay.
I'm a Logan Square kid.
So a lot of Puerto Ricans, Cubans out there.
A lot of everything. You know, when Logan Square was like the 90s Logan Square.
Yeah, not what it is now.
You know, what was Logan Square before? You know, you had Cubanos, you had Dominicanos, you had you had Mexican, you had Puerto Rican. It was just like this melting pot of Latinos in Logan Square. And I'm very fortunate to be able to have had the opportunity to be in that space in that time in that era in the 90s it was beautiful. It had a lot, so I had the opportunity to have connections with people of Latin America because of, you know,
where
being
you
around
are.
So many different Latinos you know, from different places,
especially within the Logan Square community. I grew up in the Logan Square area till I was about 12.
Okay.
And then after 12 we moved over here to the Belmont Cragen, which is very similar. But the Logan Square area to me was, like you mentioned, a melting pot, because you were able to go to a Cuban restaurant, a nice upscale Cuban restaurant, and you will go to a nice little hole in the wall to eat some Puerto Rican food. even Dominican food is not too far from there, more in the Hermosa Park, Humboldt Park area. So to me, it was great to be able to see all these different, you know, cultures merge together and create this nice little, we're all Latinos,
like
instead
hub.
Of like, yeah,
right, like
instead of like, oh, tú eres Dominicana, tú eres Puerto Riqueña, you know, it was all together as one. Now, How did you get into the whole blog of Afro Latina Natural?
So
I'm just gonna jump into it.
Let's jump in. Let's do it. Time is ticking, right? So then, so I've always loved writing, right? Like I've it's just always been my passion. I love it. You know, I have various passions, but one of my major passions is to write. But once I got into my 20s and I went to school, I was so focused on like. Getting my master's, education, you know, getting my education, being a teacher, developing my craft as an educator, getting married, having two kids. And when I hit the brakes at 30, I felt a void, right? And I felt like, wait, I have all these things that I've accomplished that that I wanted to accomplish by the age of 30, and I have a void. What is that? So I had to really do a lot of self-reflecting and a lot of soul-searching. And I, you know, I was like, Angie, you're not writing. You're not writing poetry. You're not writing at all. And so then that idea of blogging came about when, like, 2010 or so.
Okay.
But I needed something to really propel me to write again. Okay. Just because I was so busy, and you really kind of have to force yourself to writing when you write and you have other things to do, such as like a full-time job. So then as I was transitioning, really doing the soul searching, I also was as an educator, to be a good educator, you have to bring your best self, right? And to bring your best self, you have to bring all of who you are. So it kind of gives you an opportunity to reflect on yourself and who you are as a person and your identity. And I started kind of digging more into the history of like Afro-Latinidad, Afro-Descendientes, people of African descent in Latin America and here in the U.S. And then a situation happened with my daughter. She was 5 years old, and she comes home telling me, just crying, devastated. Oh, I hate my hair. I hate my hair. I'm like, why? And I'm like, what is going on? Yeah. And then she tells me that pretty much kids were like making fun of her hair. She has big, curly, you know, hair. And it was like 25 years earlier when I was 5 years old in Puerto Rico. I remember being, like, if it was yesterday, I was probably arguing about some Legos with another classmate. She didn't know any better. She was five, and she got upset and said, "Tú eres fea porque eres negra y tienes el pelo malo." Like straight up, 5 years old. And it was funny because then this happens to my daughter, which was not specifically the same scenario, but it was like somebody attacking her because of an obvious physical trait that ties her back to her African ancestry as a weakness.
And these are kids, mind you, right?
You know, they don't know any better, right? Like they're just kind of
learning it somewhere.
They're learning it somewhere. I mean, whether it's parents, society, you never know, right? And that's when I, you know, so I told her, you know, don't worry, mamita, you're beautiful. You know, you do all these things as a mother to kind of raise that confidence. I bought all kinds of books of like, you know, curly hair, and I know I'm happy to be nappy. I put her in bomba classes. You know, I really wanted her to like
embrace
her blackness, embrace her like her African ancestry and Latinidad, of course. To be strong. So then a year later, so she asked me a year later, she's six, and she tells me, "Mommy, why don't you wear your hair curly like me?" And I said, "Well, I don't know, mamita." And me, ignorant on my behalf, I said, "Well, you know, my curls are not as pretty as yours." So here I am trying to do all this like self-empowerment with her. But then I'm self-hating
and you're
expressing self-hatred, right?
Right.
And she turned, I'm telling you, kids, this is why I love working with kids, because you're the most amazing little people in the world. she says, "Well, you told me that I should love myself the way God made me. So why don't you love yourself God made you and wear your curly hair like mine?" And that was it.
Wow.
And like everything came kind of harmonized, right? Like everything, it's like it came about, and it's like my kids are watching. Kids are watching. Always.
They watch.
The new generation is watching. Yeah. So I need to set an example. And although I was very confident of my Afro-Latinidad, I think that my hair was like the last thing that I had not really embraced. Because it's so obvious, right? You can't get away from the hair. You know, aesthetics is, you know, is it, right? So when I decided to go natural, and just transition into from relaxed here to just wearing my big pajon, which in Dominican Republic, it means your big afro, right?
Yeah.
I decided this is what's going to propel me to write it. This is going to be the writing. This is going to, and that's when I started my blog. And and it started really just like as like experience, just kind of sharing my story,
right.
about going natural, and you know, trying to use products that are green, you know, not to to be, you know, self-preservation and not using harmful chemicals. But then it morphed into this like exploration of like my identity and really, really intentionally putting my African ancestry in the forefront of my identity, right? Rather than like on the side, like, you know, like I could choose. I don't have to choose between being black and being Latina. Like I could be both.
And that's what exactly what I wanted to bring up, because I think that's where the movement has started out, because a lot of people will say you had to choose for a very long time whether you were black or Latino, right? Or African.
I feel like that's how society is set up. Like they have to categorize
especially
you.
Especially in
the
U.S.
If they can't put you in a category, they're like, what do we do?
But not just here, though, because if you look at in Mexico, right, they just recognized
their Afro-descendientes. Yeah.
So they just recognized. So it's been always this whole thing of, and I think it goes back to, you know, it has to go back all the way to when the slaves were
colonial,
coming in, that they didn't want to make them feel like they were actually human, right? So they will separate them as a subclass.
Yeah.
You were, and then when you start growing, right, you have all these people that started, you know, merging together, you know, the Africans with the natives of the whatever country they were in. Then you were like, okay, I want to identify with those that are getting the privilege rather than the ones that were treated like slaves.
Of course.
So I kind of wanted to talk more. That was like a little side story, but the pelo malo concept, right? And a lot of people who are listening, perhaps they never heard that term before. A lot of our listeners might not speak Spanish, or maybe did not grow up with that term, right? Pelo malo. I've known pelo malo since my grandmother had curly hair, right? She was of African descent, right? So she had that in her background. And she will always be like, ah, a mí no me importa si yo tengo el pelo malo. She was very strong lady, you know, abuelita.
I
talk
that.
About
I
her in every podcast.
Abuelita.
Abuelita was a very strong lady.
That's good stuff.
And then both of my grandmothers actually have African background. So that concept, I've heard it since I was a little kid. You know, it was to the point where, like, you will hear moms telling their daughters, I know, peinate o hazte el doobie-doobie or do this so that you don't have pelo malo, you know?
Yeah.
Because it was always associated, pelo malo, as being dirty or as being poor or as being... Yeah, so, like, I remember, who was it? It was an older lady. I used to work with a lot of seniors before my job that I have now. And I remember the older lady was complaining that her caseworker was black, right? And she's like, oh, I don't know if she has piojos because she has pelo malo. I can't tell, you know, if it's pelo, like, really, really racist. And the Puerto Rican lady, well, you could tell that she had some African in her from back in the day. Like, she had, like, the features of, you know, a typical Boricua lady. She was from Ponce, you know, like... I could tell, but she was very big about. She had her hair dyed blonde, very anti-black, right?
And
maybe perhaps you grew up with that. Perhaps you saw that a lot. You know, I don't know, but I saw it a lot when I was growing up. I saw a lot of people that would hate that they had black in them, right? So, can you tell me a little bit about that? Have you ever face that? Did you face it personally?
Well, I think that the idea when I was five was like the first time that I was like, oh, whoa, like, there's something about me physically is bad, right? And then I went home crying.
Right.
And I think that was also like a great, my mom's a hairstylist. So I grew up in a beauty shop, which is so ironic, right? Because she's one of the best too. She's awesome. She lives here in Chicago, you know, and she is really good at what she does. So she relaxed my hair at an early age. Yeah. I had relaxed hair for most of my life until I went natural a couple of years ago. But my mom never used the term pelo malo. And I think it was because of that experience when I was five. Like, she always made sure that she let people know, and she kind of checked people in a very funny way. She's very funny, right? Yeah. So she uses comedy as a way to kind of buffer things. And when people will say... pelo malo, she will always say, no, pelo malo no es el pelo rizo. Bad hair is not curly hair. Pelo malo es el que te deja. Bad hair is the one that abandons you. The one that when you're bald, well, you know, you don't have healthy hair, it fell off. You know, so es el pelo malo, you know. And it's funny because that was her way. And but really, that was her a way for her to kind of let people know, like, no, you know, like, check your words.
Correct.
Check
what you're correct. Nice
in a nice way, in a funny way.
Right.
Right. And people will laugh at it, and then they will not use it as much. Right. Mm-hmm. But she never used it with me. My mom really worked so hard and pretty much fostering empowerment in me as a negra, right? Mm-hmm. Like as a black woman, as a Dominicana. But I did face it in other spaces, you know, in many spaces. I continue to pretty much face it sometimes, you know. But now, the pelo malo, you know, I think that we think of pelo malo and when people use it, sometimes they're not really trying to be mean. I think that they don't realize.
It has become like just normal.
Yeah, just like this normalized term of like, mm-hmm. ay, tú tienes el pelo tan malo, like your hair is so bad. Mm-hmm. But the implications of that term are so harmful.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And are way more harmful than what we think, because it's not just saying, your hair is hard to comb, or your hair is hard to manage. You know, mm-hmm. you're really saying one of the most obvious things that ties you back to your African ancestry is hard to look at.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Really, that's what you're saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So imagine, and I always think of children, right? Because adults, you know, you could hold your own, right?
Yeah.
And you could check yourself or be politically correct.
Right.
But children they're growing, right? They're watching. I always say they're watching. So mm-hmm. whether you're saying pelo malo to a child that has curly hair, now you're pretty much perpetuating the mm-hmm. self-hatred.
Exactly.
Like the self-hate.
Right.
You're perpetuating mm-hmm. it. And even if it's like maybe the primito that it doesn't have curly hair, mm-hmm. what you're saying to that child is like, I'm superior than my family member,
right. mm.
because I don't have obvious connections yeah. to my African ancestry.
Mm-hmm. And it goes back to even seeing when a child is born, right, and they have light eyes or uh-huh. colored eyes, right? Mm-hmm. Ay, ese nene va a ser un picaflor, you know, or he's gonna have mm-hmm. all the ladies because he has bright eyes. Well, yeah. qué lindo, you know, salió uh-huh. because he has bright colored eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So mm-hmm. we see it from very early on, and I think it also has to do. That plays a big role in this whole Afro-Latino movement, because you have people that for many, many years will pick whether they were Latino or African, right? So
right.
I want to talk a little bit more about that, and
okay.
perhaps you could give me a quick look at what Afro-Latino, and I keep saying a movement because it's something that I've seen a lot more coming up, mm-hmm. and I mm-hmm. kind of use it in that terms, but it's something yeah. that's been around forever,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So can you give us a little, for those listeners who might not know what Afro-Latino is, can you give them a little background on that?
Right. So, you know, there are, the term Afro-Latino, it has been more of a mainstream term now,
right.
but
now.
It's been around for a long time, and mm-hmm. studies, scholarly studies and research, and the term Afro-Latino has been around for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
And there are various definitions, scholarly definitions to the term Afro-Latino, but they all narrow down to a term that describes a group of people that are of African descent that have roots in Latin America,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
right? And it's across borders, right? It's not just here in the U.S. You hear it a lot here in the U.S., but there are people from the African diaspora, right?
Mm-hmm.
You hear the African diaspora, you're like, what is the African diaspora? Well, it's just pretty much the spread of all these people that
right.
were brought from Africa yeah. to pretty much do free labor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were spread all over the Americas. And I say mm-hmm. the Americas, not just...
Right.
Because North America is part of the Americas,
yes,
right?
Well,
we always
right?
forget that,
exactly.
right?
Like, yeah, I'm glad you said that, yeah.
You know? So, so it's just this diaspora. You know, I always say it. One time I was, you know, when you write, you're like, sometimes just something comes up, and then you're like, oh, I got to write it down. And mm-hmm. I wrote this quote one time, and I'm like, you know, the Afro-Latino movement is like the renaissance of the African diaspora
yeah.
in the Americas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like our ancestors... they refuse to let their stories go untold. Like,
mm-hmm.
they're coming back. They're saying, we are
That's
here.
Great.
We've always been here.
Right, right.
And we're kind of like the children of the diaspora, the
yeah.
great-great-grandchildren.
Now, is there mm-hmm. a specific, because I want to say, you know, if you come from Puerto Rico,
mm-hmm.
you probably have a percentage of you that's mm-hmm. African, right?
Mm-hmm.
But is there a breakdown at all of how you should identify yourself as Afro-Latino? Do you have to be... 50%. I mean, right, you know, right.
Like,
I'm just curious.
It, right? Yeah, yeah. Like, who claims that exactly, you know, like, I'm an Afro-Latino? Exactly. Really, it's a personal choice, okay. Right?
Yeah, I would agree.
Because some people, you are whatever you want to identify yourself as, mm-hmm. right? Whatever aspects of your identity. You know, we have, our identity has different aspects, a whole mm-hmm. bunch of different facets. Mm-hmm. But I really do believe that, I think aesthetics, right? Like, if you have the black experience because of the way you look, whether, yeah. you know, even if you're light skinned, you have facial features that connect you to African mm-hmm. ancestry, mm-hmm. or you have a certain look that when you walk through life and you navigate through life, you're going to face certain experiences and mm-hmm. discrimination mm-hmm. because when you walk into the room, people are making judgments on
your
education, on your status, on a lot of things. They mm-hmm. make judgments because you have ties to African ancestry. Mm-hmm. So I think that it kind of boils down to that your walk in life is of a specific experience. And, mm-hmm. you know, like Afro-Latinos, I think I could speak for myself. Growing up in Chicago, when I went to schools, I remember having, like, friends, and sometimes I wasn't black enough to be African-American, yeah. but I wasn't Latina enough. I mean, I was too black to be Latina,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
you're always kind of, like, in this, like, you really learn to navigate in, mm-hmm. in social spaces mm-hmm. as an Afro-Latino or mm-hmm. Afro-Latina. And it was always very interesting. I think that the term Afro-Latino... those that choose to use a label, you know, and I personally choose that label because it makes me, it gives me the opportunity to have to choose,
okay.
right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's an intersectional term. Mm-hmm. It's an intersectional term to say, you know, that kind of parts from the colonial legacy.
Yeah.
It helps me part from that mm-hmm. and say, I am Latina, I am black, and I don't have to choose. This is mm-hmm. me,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Do you ever get, like, when you were talking about that, about not being black enough or Latina enough, where people tell you, like, well, you're not really black or you're not really Latina, right? Because, I mean, my mom was actually telling me a story how someone was telling her, but you're not really Puerto Rican, though, right? Because you don't do this or that. And yeah. she's just, like, staring yeah. at this person, like... And she was like, I'm not trying to be racist, but
that's the
actually
that's the,
you are.
I'm not trying to be racist.
I'm not trying to be racist, but like, you're not really that Puerto Rican, right?
Yeah. What does that
have
mean?
You ever experienced that because of this? Like, well, you could because you identify with so many different
yes.
pieces. Where do you ever get this thing where people are like, well, you're not really that black,
right.
or you're not, you know what I mean?
You know, they're microaggressions. Like, yeah. I saw a video on Facebook one time, and I loved it because it was like talking about microaggressions are pretty mm-hmm. much just like getting. Bit by mosquitoes mm-hmm. once in a while mm-hmm. and like okay they hurt and then it goes away, you
yeah.
put neosporin and you're fine. But then if you have a lifetime of mosquito bites mm-hmm. over and over again, you get aggravated after a while.
Yeah.
For example, I remember I was maybe a teenager and I was in a fruteria, and he must have been from Central America, mm-hmm. a male. He was in front of me and I was talking, and you know, I don't know what I said. I was talking to someone else in Espanol, and he turns around and says, oh, you know, ¿Cómo es que usted sabe español también? And I said, what do you mean? Like,
right.
you know, he was so... taken aback
yeah.
the fact that I knew I was fluent in Spanish uh-huh. and like, how does this morena know so
yeah.
so you
yeah,
know Spanish
yeah.
so well, it being my first language, and and I honestly I went in and I said, señor, because you know that slaves were brought to Latin America mm-hmm. to do free labor, and therefore you have people that are black Latinos, you
right,
know?
Right.
And I think that was another instance when I was like, really? Like, I really, that's when a lot of my self-awareness of like mm-hmm. being a black Latina mm-hmm. and Afro-Latina in my journey. And then, yes, there were times in my teenage years in which I had, you know, African-American friends, and they kind of didn't know what to take, like,
right.
they didn't know exactly what I was,
yeah.
and I think
wait.
At times sometimes they would be like, wait, you know, so you speak Spanish, when they would first meet me, and I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm Dominican, and you know, and when you're from Chicago, you know, your lingo is kind of very like, we all kind of have the same
yeah.
lingo
yeah.
in English, and then they're like, oh, you're Latin, you know, you're Spanish, yes, I, you know, but the beauty is that we have connections, and it's funny because we even have talked about like food, cuisine, mm-hmm. and the Southern cuisine in the here in the United States, African American Southern cuisine is very similar to the Caribbean cuisine. Mm-hmm. They just have different terms, yeah. mm-hmm. and then we like talk, and I'm like, you see. We're all white right. people, right? So yes, I mean now as of course as an adult, you know, I don't face that much. But when mm-hmm. I was younger, yes, especially here in Chicago, because you know, Latinos, Dominicans were not really known. I remember being yeah. here in Chicago, and they're like, "What's Dominican?"
Yeah, that's a funny thing that you mentioned.
And I had to say Sammy Sosa, you know, because Sammy yeah. Sosa. Which now I'm like, ironically, so, I can't use Sammy Sosa anymore with all
you read my mind, because I was about to bring up Sammy Sosa, and before man. I do that, I wanted to mention, you know, it's very interesting that there's not a lot of Dominicans here in Chicago. Actually, there's a lot of Dominicans in Michigan, Grand Rapids,
yes,
Michigan,
yes,
and
I've
who
heard
shout
that.
Out to Carlos is also part of the of La Verdad.
Okay.
He's Dominican.
Oh,
he lives
cool.
in Grand
hey,
Rapids. We actually have two Dominicans on our team. We have Carlos, who's okay. in Michigan, and Ivan, who he also is known as El Talibán.
Oh,
he's over in in Orlando in Florida. So both Dominicans, born
good
from
charity,
Dominican
good
Republic.
Charity.
But I was going to transition into this discussion of Sammy Sosa, right?
Oh,
because
man.
He's Dominican.
Yeah, I wasn't prepared for this.
because he's Dominican, oh, and he's kind of like the visual aspect of what telling someone pelo malo or telling someone
salte del sol.
That, yeah.
Don't get darker.
It's a telling that how bad it could be later on in life. If you haven't checked out Sammy Sosa, I want you to Google Sammy Sosa now, right? For those who don't know who Sammy Sosa is, a guy who broke many records, played for the Chicago Cubs, mm-hmm. My favorite baseball team. you know, did a lot for the city. Now, I do want to bring up one thing, though. I noticed, and I think someone had mentioned it or did an article about it, that mm-hmm. he faced a lot of discrimination, being that he was Latino and Black, right? Mm-hmm. Especially in the Cubs franchise. I mean, it comes to this day, they really don't recognize him. I mean, he did do some illegal stuff, but he mm-hmm. brought in a huge fan base to the mm-hmm. Chicago Cubs, right? And it's very sad that he does not get recognized, and I think that's a discussion that we could have on another day. But if you Google Sammy Sosa now, you'll see that. So there's
everybody
memes out there.
Out their phones.
There's memes. There's like memes out there that he looks like Pepto Bismol and that he does this and that. Well, he went
horrible.
Through this. I think, or I don't know if it's official or not, but he's gone through like this color treatment where he's trying to become lighter, right?
There's a soap or lotion that they show pictures of people like scrubbing this. Whatever the hell it mm-hmm. is, and they're like three shades lighter.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's kind of like, you know,
like,
we think of that. We think of like Michael Jackson, right? Mm-hmm. But Michael Jackson actually had a condition, mm-hmm. right? But he, from what I've heard, you know, is that Sammy Sosa has been taking this medication to kind of mm-hmm. get lighter. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not an expert on that.
Yeah.
But I first started seeing it when a couple years back, like just the way that he dressed, mm-hmm. he will change, like he'll dye his hair or he'll mm-hmm. cut it real short mm-hmm. or just straighten it out all mm-hmm. the time mm-hmm. to get that identity, right? And mm-hmm. I bring him up because there's a lot of people that mm-hmm. are probably going through the same thing. And mm-hmm. I feel like this movement of Afro-Latino is very positive in that mm-hmm. sense, because the worst thing that could happen is self-hate, I think,
yeah.
personally.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
It's the fact that you hate your own race so much that you hate somebody else that looks just like you. You know, I've seen mm-hmm. that so much in Puerto Rico, especially. I remember going to Puerto Rico and actually, besides that, going to Dominican Republic when we went there for vacation mm-hmm. and people saying, "Yo no soy negro." Mm-hmm. And they were dark. They were, you know, African. They were just straight up. You could tell they were Afro Latinos. Mm-hmm. But they're like, "No, yo no soy negro. No me digas negro a mí, blah, blah, blah." And I've talked to other Dominicans, especially friends of mine and all that, that if you say that they're Black, oh my God, it's the worst thing that you could have ever told them.
Just open up.
So this self hate, you know, has been so much that you want to change your own color and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it plays a big role in just your own society, right? Mm-hmm. You start thinking that you're not worth it. Enough as Pepe over here, who's making mm-hmm. it big because he's light, mm-hmm. has bright eyes or whatever, blue eyes and yeah. all that. So with this whole Sammy Sosa, what's your take on that, on the whole Sammy Sosa thing, or not just that, but the whole self hate
and internalizing racism?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the key, one of the other reasons why I blog about my experience and really, mm-hmm. like I said earlier, like putting my African ancestry in the forefront of my identity, as part of my identity, and using it as a source of power mm-hmm. and beauty, natural mm-hmm. beauty. Like, this is my hair and I'm going to accept it as it is. And if my Afro makes you uncomfortable, then it is what it is. That's something you have to deal with, not
right.
me.
It's not right? my problem, it's your problem.
Yeah, like mm-hmm. It's self-acceptance, mm-hmm. like self-acceptance and all that comes, you know, because when you hide a part of you, when you don't bring your full you to any situation yeah. and you hide part of yourself, partly, your African ancestry and your experience as a person of color, right? You're not going to be your best self. Mm-hmm. And you're going to go through life with this idea of, like, I'm not worthy.
Inferior,
I'm not enough. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then so many things that come from that, right? When you say, I'm not enough. And the choices you make when you feel I'm not enough. And I think that ties back to Sammy. I'm not a skin expert.
Yeah.
but based on what we've seen with Sammy, I think that is a reflection. I think it is an example of, like, what sometimes people will do so that they could feel accepted because they don't think they're worthy, right? Mm-hmm. Of, like, acceptance mm-hmm. from others, from, you know, powers that be, maybe. I mean, I'm not sure what his background or his experience was to get to the point where he feels that's what he needs to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it is sad, you know, it is sad. And it's funny, I saw a video on, you know, because media, you know, Facebook, you see all kinds of videos. And I saw a video the other day. I think it's We Are Me Too. It's an awesome site.
Yeah, I love that site.
I love that site. Yeah. Awesome. There's a lot of Dominicanos on it, too. And, you know, and they did. They shared, like, a video about, like, this situation with Sammy Sosa. And, like, you know, and it's kind of sad, right? Because mm-hmm. he's an icon for many. And then to do that, it just sends a bad message to other people or young, again, the children, mm-hmm. even if they don't know who Sammy Sosa is, but just, like, this idea of, like, oh, wow, you know, he's doing that to be self-accept, you know, to mm-hmm. be accepted by society.
Mm-hmm.
But self-hatred is one of the worst things.
Yeah, and I'm not an expert or anything like that, but you could tell, like, certain things that have happened to him that have perhaps made him feel like, man, perhaps if I was white, you know, maybe this wouldn't be happening. Maybe mm-hmm. I'd be still doing stuff with Major League Baseball. That's just me thinking, you know, like mm-hmm. saying, oh, mejor le pasó esto, mm-hmm. esto, lo otro. Mm-hmm. But also the discussion of things that we see, not just as Afro-Latinos or just as Latinos, that mm-hmm. we start seeing that make us feel like we're inferior, you know. Like, for example, we all grow up in church, right? A lot of us. I want to say about 80% of Latinos have mm-hmm. some type of Christian background to mm-hmm. them, right? So whether it is going to a Catholic church or a Christian church, mm-hmm. we always see a white Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of mm-hmm. times I remember talking to a couple of years ago, I was able to sit in on a chat with Father Flager, mm-hmm. who's, if you don't know who Father Flager is, huge civil rights movement leader, also a huge advocate for minorities here in Chicago. And I remember him talking about how he had to change the Jesus, the statue of Jesus that they had at San Sabina Church to a black Jesus in order for people to feel accepted and feel that they were at the same level, godly level, you know, or that they could achieve a godly level, right? It was just the little things that you see. Mm-hmm. For example, all the statues, and this is another podcast that I heard, where a lot of statues in the Catholic Church in Puerto Rico were all white for a very long time. And this priest came in and he's like, you know what, we have to change them. So he put covers over them, right, so that people wouldn't see them, but know that there was something there, a saint there, and that you could become as saintly as them. But I think that starts kind of messing with your head from a very early on, like saying, oh, I could never be as good as Jesus because I don't even look like him, you know. I don't even look like him, and these people are telling me that I have pelo malo, and not just that, not just Afro-Latinos or African descent, or but also just the Latino itself, right? Mm-hmm. When you come to this country and you're automatically thinking, oh, I have to work hard labor. That's what Latinos do. Mm-hmm. Well, I remember one time this one guy telling me that he was like a pretty high up there in the company I was working at. I'm not going to say the bank's name. he was pretty high up there. He was like a VP. And they all thought he was like, he came in I think one day it was his day off. He came in a shirt and shorts, and they thought that he was just a regular person picking up like a check or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they treated him like crap, like the tellers and all that. The next day, he wrote them all up. He's like, "Did you not know that I'm the VP?" You know, all these things.
Yes, yes.
Another thing too. I remember seeing a guy where his last name was pretty it was straight up Latino, right? It was something like Garcia. Sanchez, right? And they were looking at it, and he came in, and they're like, "Oh, I'm looking for so and so Sanchez," and he looked very he was very light skinned, very white looking, right? Blue eyes and all that. And he's like, "Oh, that's me." So you have that aspect of the name. You have the aspect of how you look, you know, and then what you're supposed to be doing that I feel play a big role. And the reason I bring this up is because we're all about empowering our culture, keeping our culture alive and our tradition. And I think what ends up happening is that we start getting ashamed of it, right? We start trying to assimilate into this culture and forget that our tradition and has a huge role into who we are.
Yes.
And I love that you do what you do as far as embracing, even if it just comes to the aesthetics, right, of having the hair and all that, but you're going back to the culture and you're going back to the tradition. And I want to bring up one of the things that I love about your blog is that you give people tips, right, on how to get your hair, how to do a different hairstyle as opposed to just an afro or something like that. Yeah. So can you talk a little bit more about that? I know I went into a whole...
Yeah, I was like, wow, we're going to be here for like 20 minutes. No,
that was good.
I love doing that, but...
You know, so yeah, so it started, my blog started about just sharing my experience. Okay, how am I going to do my hair? How am I going, what products am I going to try?
And these are all written blogs, they're not video blogs?
Written blogs, you know, and I've done very... like a few video blogs, but I'm more of a writer, right? Like the purpose of the blog was to just kind of get something to help me, to propel me to write. And I think that it started off like that. And then before you know it, I started just kind of just sharing experiences as an Afro-Latina mom, raising Afro-Latino kids. You know, with the blog, I just want, you know, it's interesting. I just want people to connect to it, right? Like, I want other Latinas that may be on that fence of like, ooh, should I go natural? Should I let my hair, like, curly? To really embrace it. Like, if you want to, like, it's okay to embrace it. And it's going to be self, you know, it's going to be transforming. It's going to be life changing.
Yeah.
Because you're going to really embrace your beauty as what you are, whatever that may be. And with the blog, I try, you know, but I really do. What I love the most about the blog is when I have other people, other Latinas, Afro-Latinas, whether it's in Afro, you know, República Dominicana, Dominican Republic, or Puerto Rico. I even have, like, some followers from Argentina. Yeah. And, like, we connect through the digital world. I mean, I think that's why I love technology and I love the digital world. You know, there's pros and cons to it. But, like, one of the pros is that you're able to build this community and across borders.
Help each other out.
And again, children of the diaspora, the African diaspora, have been able to just kind of connect and say, hey, I connect with your experience. You know, that's a similar experience in mine. And then it doesn't silence that community, right? It brings that community to light.
Right.
And then you feel a sense of connection. And with connection comes empowerment and unity and community, which is similar to, I think, what the purpose of La Verdad is, right? Just like forming this form, the sense of community among Latinos.
Exactly.
So I think the blog has allowed for that, and I'm so grateful. I am so grateful to, you know, when I thought it was just like, well, I don't know who's gonna read my stuff, you know, like I just started blogging just to blog.
Yeah.
And be able to write and practice my craft as a writer. And little by little, I just had a lot of, like, one of my friends says, why me moments, right? And little by little, like, I had, you know, people connect with me and try to, you know, let me know, like, hey, I connect with your story. Or, hey, you know, would you like to be featured? You know, say your story. Like, share your story. I just really, really just want to share my story. And I've met some of the most amazing people, you know. I've found mentors, you know, like Raquel from Boricua Chicks and her sister. They've been great supporters for a long time. And, oh, I give them credit all the time. And I have influence, you know, from different people like Ms. Rizos. She's a curly blogger, activist in Dominican Republic. Awesome. And she's awesome. And, you know, all these different, like, connections throughout Latin America and here in the U.S. of people saying, you know what, yes, let's embrace our blackness and our Afro-Latinidad and wearing your hair curly and just embracing, you know, your pride of being black, you know, and being Latina.
Yeah.
And being all these things, you know, and not having to choose. So the blog has been, it's been a life changing.
Have you ever gotten any quote unquote hate in the sense of, and I mean that in the sense of maybe from the black community, perhaps saying, oh, you're not, you know, you're not African, or you're not, or what are you doing? Like, you don't know how it is to be. And I could see, I'm just using it as an example. Right, I could see that probably happen. Maybe it doesn't happen, but has it ever happened to you?
It hasn't happened to me yet. I'm sure that people are on the fence on both sides, you know, in the African-American community. But a lot of my followers are African-American, and they just kind of connect to my story.
That's awesome.
You know, because when you walk in life as a Black Latin, when I walk into a room, right, people don't know all my background. You know, everything that makes up my background.
Yeah.
They see a Black girl. A Black woman, right? So that in the experience that I have, although it's not the same as a African American in the United States, I would say it's different, right? Because of my Latin background being bilingual, Spanish being my first language, or not all Afro Latinos are bilingual, but just having that experience is very similar. It's actually more similar than maybe that another Latino that is of European. More European, and it's clearly has very small amount or no amount of African ancestry. Their experience is a lot different than my experience. My experience is closer to that of an African American woman. So I think that I haven't, you know, I had my followers. I have some followers that a lot of followers are African American, and that has not come up. And I'm very grateful for that because it is a topic that is discourse that you could be on both sides of the fence but it's a dialogue too. I think it's worth talking about, right? But I haven't faced that yet,
because I remember having that same dialogue in college. I was real big on listening to a lot of like bomba music, plena music, a lot of African centered music. And I remember having a dialogue like that in college, where it was I was also part of the Black Student Union, right? And I was the only one that did not look Black in the Black Student Union. But I remember having that dialogue where it was like one guy was like, oh, you know, you don't know what it is to be discriminated. And I had to stop him a second, and I was like, you know, we've both been discriminated, maybe in a different way, but very similar, you know, and the struggle has been there, you know, going back to being discriminated perhaps in your own country, right? And it happens a lot where in Puerto Rico or Dominican Republic, because you are Black, you get discriminated against, right? So I had to kind of have that dialogue and explain it, and that's the reason I brought it up, was because there has been, unfortunately, because of media and because of things that happen, where there's even a division between, you know, the African-American, the Africans that come here directly from Africa, and even the Afro-Latinos. So I'm glad that you haven't had that happen, but it's a discussion that I'm sure a lot of people perhaps have got it in the past. Like, you know, this whole of, like, I suffer more than you, it sucks, you know? It's like, come on, man, we both suffer.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's, like, the result of, the legacy of colonial legacy, right? Like, this idea of, like, if you guys are separated, it's better for the, you know, to perpetuate the legacy of colonialism.
Yep. It sucks.
But I think that having that dialogue is so helpful with other minorities here in the United States, or just overall the people, because then you open up this dialogue about, like, wait, this is my experience. And then you make those connections and say, wait, interesting. I didn't know that you had experiences similar to mine.
Yeah.
And then you have this intersectional, like, you know, connection with people.
Right. Yeah. And it is beautiful, that in itself, and it opens up. Empowering that it you is, can make that connection and bridge those gaps because of technology and being able to give other people a platform to connect with you and identify with you or just feel
knowing,
safe to
just knowing that you
feel
have
good
support.
To be themselves.
I also
I've had some followers that like have DM'd me like on Instagram and they've, you know, asked, like, you know, either how do you start a blog or just different things. And I'm like, you know, share your story. Share your story, because sharing your story is going to open dialogue with other people. And sharing your story also opens up people's eyes as far as, like, let's say in the Latino community, of like really kind of being an upstander, not a bystander, when people make remarks that are racist, right? Like, don't be a bystander. If you hear somebody saying pelo malo to like a 5-year-old little girl, like, ay, esa tiene el pelo bien malo, ay, está un poco malo, no, you tell person, even if you're not an Afro Latino or you are, say, you know, maybe you shouldn't say that, you know, like, her hair's not, and check them.
Yeah.
Like, really. I mean, because we don't have time to waste with children, right?
Right.
And I always go resort back to children just because they're the new generation.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to do better. We need to progress, progress as a community, you know? And
And I know that one of your projects, too, has been the Two Cities, Un Mundo, right? Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about that. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could go more into detail. Mm-hmm. But I noticed that you guys get supplies, right, for a city in Dominican Republic, the one that you grew up in?
Yes, okay. Yes. Well, I didn't grow up there, but my family's from there.
What part?
I was born there. That was the city. It's called Los Tres Brazos.
Okay.
And it is in Santo Domingo, which is a capital city. Mm-hmm. And it's a big barrio, but it's very impoverished. Just a lot of... need and like in a lot of developing countries, urban cities in Latin America. And so it started back in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Really started 2012, the idea of it. I was stuck in the DR because there was like this huge hurricane. I'm like, oh my goodness, I gotta get back to work. And I mean, it was terrible.
Yeah.
I won't say the airline, but the airline had me stuck there for like another week with no money. Anyway, so I'm in front of my abuelita's porch and I'm with a cousin and they start school a little earlier, well, a lot earlier in Dominican Republic.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, you know, I saw children playing around. And I'm like, why are these children playing? I thought school started already here. And he's like, and he shares with me, he's part of the community. He's very involved in the community. And he said, well, you know, a lot of parents don't send their children to school on time, you know, because in Dominican Republic, oftentimes people get paid either twice a month or once a month.
Oh, I think we went on a tour about that.
Right. So then, but most of the time it's once a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like if you use all your funds and school starts in the middle of August, you got to wait till September to get paid.
Yeah.
And then you have money to be able to.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
they
he
told
explains.
Us about that.
So I didn't know this, right? So he's explaining this to me. And as he's talking, my mind is like, I'm on teacher mode. I'm like, really? You know how important the first day? You know how important the first day of school is? You know, you got to be there, right?
Yeah.
So then and something came about and I said, you know, this is why, and I'm very spiritual and I'm not going to bring, you know, all my aspect of spirituality, but I was like, God had me here. He had me here stuck in the DR because he wanted me to start this and put this in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember that I felt like I had to do something. And I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to work this out, but I'm going to work this out. Mm-hmm. I have to help. I got to do something. I don't know what I could do, but I'm going to do something.
Yeah.
So then in 2013, as part of like, you know, with my teacher colleagues, I just put it out there and said, hey, if you guys would like to donate, let's send some school supplies to Dominican Republic for kids. You know, so I started with school supplies and it just grew.
Mm-hmm.
The support grew, not just with my teacher colleagues, but just with the network of people that I know and family and friends and people in the network. And then in 2015, I decided to do backpacks. I said, okay, we're going to do backpacks. But I was kind of nervous, right? Because you ship this from Chicago to the Dominican Republic.
What's going to happen?
But what's going to happen?
Right.
This is my name on the line. Those backpacks get lost. You know, what's going to happen? I mean, how do I explain to people they bought these backpacks and they got lost?
Yeah.
But I've been, I've always collaborated with a non-for-profit over there called Fundelosa. Mm. It's a public clinic in the barrio, and they have a building, so they at least have like a space, and they have, you know, they give free health care to people in the community that can't afford it, and they also have workshops of health, like public health workshops. So I contacted them because my cousin knew them, and he does volunteering work for them, and I said, let's do it through them. I know that they're, and it's been, I mean, the coordinator, Fausto, he's been so honest. And because you never know, right? When you don't know if they're going to come out missing because backpacks could be sold. I mean, they were good quality backpacks, you know? So in 2015, we sent them, and I was like, Lord, please help me get these 30. There were only 30 backpacks, but they were, you know, very dear to my heart. And they got there, and the kids, anyway, so I got to go.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Deliver them to
Well, I didn't deliver them, but when I got there, I was able to be part of the distribution because I had to ship them in a box, right? So, and the kids were so, I mean, they were so grateful.
Yeah.
The smallest thing, right?
Yeah. The smallest thing. I mean, and these were, you know, these kids are going back to school and saying, wow, you know, somebody, I am enough. for mm-hmm. someone
to mm-hmm. care about me, yeah.
To care about me and send me something when I didn't have to do anything. I mean, and they wrote like thank you letters for people that donated, yeah. But just the idea of like, you know, you're important enough. School, because for me it's symbolism. Like education is the key to helping you get to a better space and progress. Agreed. As a person. You know, that, that's
repeat
just
repeat that
educator.
Sentence over again.
No, it is. It, yeah. It paves the way. It's the window.
It does.
To get you out of a situation. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you're nobody can ever take your titles away from you. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And it's the symbolism for me. So anyways, 2013 came around. I went to visit. I mean, it was just an amazing experience. The kids were super excited. I'm like, that could have been me. I could have been one of those kids. Yeah. And my mom always been like a hustler. She's a hard worker. I know she would have done everything to make me be okay and get education. Yeah. But I could have been one of those kids. I had the opportunity to be in another space where I had resources to, you know, better education or better quality of life. But I'm like, I could have been one of those kids. And I've always loved education. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, if I could at least one of those kids say, you know what? I like school. You know, mm-hmm. I got this backpack. I got, you know, and it's winning for me.
Yeah.
Right. That's at least one kid. So anyway, so moving forward to, you know, we fast forward to now. And I this year. It's my fourth year doing it. I was like, let's turn 60. And mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm going to get these 60 or if I'm going to get the money. And mm-hmm. But I said, let's do it. I said, God, you put this in my heart. Let's do this. And I've had what I thought that people were not going to support. Because, you know, people donate 1 year and then the next they're like, you know.
Yeah.
I've had the most support out of all years. That's and it's awesome. Just, I mean, people that I don't even know. It's people growing. Shared it on platforms, social media platforms. Mm-hmm. They shared it with other friends. At work, they will, like, make a collection and, like, donate it to the GoFundMe. And I was in tears. Like, 2 weeks ago when I was packing up the backpacks and shipping them off, I was in tears. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, this is community, right? Like, that's people awesome, saying, you know, education is key. And I'm very grateful that we were able to do this as a collective, right? Like, I didn't do it alone. Mm-hmm. The people that donated mm-hmm. and helped me out. It's been such a beautiful experience. And humbling, right? Like, the idea that it's like, if you have an idea to help someone, if something comes to you and you want to help the community, whatever community it may be, go for it. Yeah. You never know who's going to want to help. Sometimes mm-hmm. people just want to help, you know, and that's why I'm such an optimistic. And this experience with the project, it has been definitely another add-on to my optimism, because I'm like, people do care.
And I personally love that's always been kind of one of those things that I've wanted to do, you know, somehow set up mm-hmm. backpacks and, mm-hmm. and supplies. So count on us for whatever
to
we can
support.
Do.
Thank you. Next year, 2018.
Yeah, definitely. You count on us. We'll do whatever it takes to get get our followers to also help out. Because to me, like, you're talking about it, and like, I get like a little tear.
Like, oh, can we?
No, because I know, because I know how it is. I know
how. My right eye.
Not the one on camera, right?
Not the whole.
I have dry eyes, man. I know how it is for some of these kids who perhaps not have, you know, the supplies. I remember my grandmother, who I bring her up in every podcast.
Abuela.
You know? She's probably the reason why I do what I do now, right? Mm-hmm. So I remember there was one kid in school that he didn't have a coat. And my grandmother didn't make money. You know, she was a stay-at-home mom for the longest. She would collect her little money here and there from what they would give her for being an after-school teacher, right?
Okay.
Once in a while. So I remember the kid didn't have a coat. He had, like, a ripped-up sweater, and my grandmother went ahead and saved up for a whole 2 months and bought him the nicest coat. I was so jealous. I was like, man, she didn't even buy me a coat, but bought him a coat. And that kid, I remember when my grandmother passed away, he was one of the first ones there at the funeral. And I didn't see him since I was, like, maybe, like, in second grade or something. Yeah. But he remembered my grandmother, somehow found out, always would keep in touch with her. And he was the baddest kid in the school, I remember. My grandmother bought him.
He's getting in trouble.
No. My grandmother bought him. My grandmother would call him that. Travieso, ven acá. She bought him that, and then every year I think she would buy him like a notebook and a pen or a pencil. And that kid graduated high school, and you know, and no one thought he would graduate even eighth grade. You know, and it was always my grandmother who was there. So when
she
you
knew
say
his
story,
pain. Yeah. She knew his pain,
and she would be like, "Man, ese nene tiene algo, pero que no le dan la oportunidad." You know?
Right, exactly.
But when you're mentioning that, I'm thinking the same thing. There's probably kids in there that have never God in anything like that. And perhaps one day they'll be a doctor or doing amazing things. We might not know, you know.
Yeah, but we won't know.
We planted that little seed, you know, and that little seed could turn into something big. So count on us for that.
Thank you.
If anybody wants to donate, or is there something, is there a link they could go to or know more about it?
On the, so then, so just to wrap up the whole Two Cities Un Mundo, I didn't think I was going to go this year. I was like, you know, I just want the 550 to be able to, like, send these backpacks and ship them. And I was talking to a mentor, and she said, you know what? Put it out there. If you want to go there and you want to see this project, this is your project, go ahead. Raise the funds.
Right.
I said, okay, I don't even know if I'm going to get to 500. And we were able to raise enough funds for me to be able not only to send these backpacks, but to go to the DR. Wow. And I'm going to be able to give workshops, poetry workshops.
Wow. Oh, that'll be so cool.
Yes. So I'm going to go to Fundelosa. I will be there at the end of August, and I'm going to be able to just work with youth between the ages of 10 and 12 in a smaller group than the 60. And we're going to do a poetry jam. And
that's
then we'll
awesome.
Distribute the backpacks, you know. Yeah. And I love, poetry has, writing and poetry and among other things, have been such a beautiful path for me to be able to get empowered. Clearly, you know, my blog has been one of, you know, my journeys of empowerment through writing. And sometimes that's just what you need, just to express yourself and using your voice, right? Because silencing someone is so harmful.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I'm really excited. I'm going to be there. God willing, everything goes well. And so there is a link on my Instagram. There's a link on my bio. My Facebook, I didn't put it on, it is on my Facebook as well. You know, if you scroll down, you click on it, you'll be able to donate. And I'm okay as far as, like, the airplane ticket is purchased already. And whatever funds I may get extra, I'm just going to save that for the next year, for 2018. Because I have other plans for 2018 with Fundelosa and the kids over there. So I'm really excited. I'm really excited how it has just kind of, what started off as just like pencils and paper for these kids that in major need. And now they're going back to school with like brand new backpacks and good quality backpacks
and that's
school supplies in there. Yes.
They just, I mean, we do the same thing where I work too, is giving them the school supplies and just like a full 24 box of crayons, like a full notebook that's, you know, not used.
Hasn't been hand me down or something.
I mean, fortunately, I didn't have to, you know, worry about getting school supplies. But sometimes even just opening up that box, like, yes, brand
the
new
crayons.
Like, I'm so excited.
You know what's so funny? That I still walk into, like, Office Max and I get excited.
Yeah,
I don't know if there's a teacher in me, but I'm like,
pens
ooh,
and
Sharpie.
Yeah.
Highlighter, Post-its, you know.
Exactly.
So it's so weird. But, like, kids, you know, I remember, you know what's funny? It, because I'm such a nerd. Even when I was little, I remember having a little sharpener. Remember the little sharpeners?
Yeah.
Pencil sharpeners. And I used to, I kid you not, every 15 to 20 minutes, I would have my pencil. It sounds really weird. And I would, like, sharpen my pencil to make sure it's nice and sharp. And then keep writing.
Yeah.
It was the most nerdy thing ever. But kids, you know, kids get impacted by the most simple things.
Right.
And sometimes, even if it would have been a very, you know, like a brand new box of crayons, not a backpack or just a box of crayons that's brand new to be able to color the world in your own terms.
Yep.
So that makes a big difference. That's how, you know, how you sometimes you make an impact on children. And it's true. It's funny. I wanted to connect back to what you said. Your grandmother was able to experience seeing what the impact of her helping this child, right? But it's true. As an educator or as an activist or as a somebody in the community organizer, you really sometimes you don't see the impact you have on people eventually.
Exactly.
And you're not even in it for that, right? It's just you're fortunate when you are able to see it.
Exactly.
You know, when I saw my high school students the other day, it was just beautiful, like to hug, you know, them telling me stories about, you know, remember when you took us to the immigration march? Like, I put that, as an educator, I've always been very social conscious, right?
Uh-huh.
And I've always tried to put social justice within my curriculum. And they were like, man, that was so cool and empowering, you know. And it was just like, wow, you remember that? You know, and it's just beautiful. I think that's one of them. I love being a teacher. I love being an educator because I think that even if I don't see it in the future, I know that if it's at least one is a winning, right?
A little seed that you plant.
Yeah.
You know, that's the biggest one. So if anyone wants to follow you on social media, where should they go?
They could go to Afro Latina Natural on Instagram, Twitter Afro Latina Curls, and Facebook Afro Latina Natural as well.
Awesome.
Yep.
And
my blog afrolatinanatural.com.
Awesome. Yep. And it's been an amazing conversation, especially because we've been able to cover everything. I think we covered anything from
yes.
history to culture
to abuelita. To tear in the right eye.
Yeah. Which is dry eyes, guys. It's dry eyes. Thank you so much for coming by.
Yes, thank you for having me. This is such an amazing
awesome.
This made my week.
Awesome.
I'm glad. Thank you.
Mi gente, if you could go ahead and you know, follow Angie on her social media platforms, share her project that she has, share her blogs. Also, do us a favor. It's going to be in our description of the podcast. For those listening through the application, just listening to the audio, you'll find her links also on the description of this podcast. Go ahead and share this episode on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Audioboom as well. Thank you so much, mi gente, and God bless. Peace.